listening to Old New Borrowed Blue on 2SER with your host, Joel Kassam.
Hello and welcome to Old New Borrowed Blue on 2SER 107.3. Joel Kassam is my name. I hope you're doing very well and thank you for joining me this week. If you're new to the show, this is where I invite a special guest into the studio and they take the musical reins by playing four of their favourite songs. And I just sit back and do very little. What a gig. All right, let's find out who we've got this week. My guest today has lived two very different lives. After school, she spent 20 years in the police force, working in roles that are sometimes too hard to imagine. But then one day, she moved into writing true crime novels. I speak of none other than author Karen Davis. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you for having me, Joel.
Thank you for coming in. I read that you were quite sporty growing up. Did you ever think of going down that field?
I would have liked to have, but I was a tennis player, so I used to play tennis 6 days a week. I actually played with Todd Woodbridge for a time, so I was pretty highly ranked as a junior, but okay. He went on to be rich and famous, and I didn't. So I was into horses as well and a lot of other sports, and I think got introduced to boyfriends and stuff at 16, so that kind of, you know, interfered with my sporting career a little bit, and I kind of just went another direction.
So, as I said before, you went into the police force pretty much straight after school.
That's right.
What drew you to that then?
My best girlfriend at school when we were 16, as you are, you know, when you're best friends at that age, you're going to do everything together. Mm-hmm. She decided she was going to be a police officer, so it was like careers week at school, and we had to pick a job to kind of do our work experience at, and she picked Cogra Police Station. So I said, I'll do that with you, might as well. You know, we can spend the whole week together and look at the baddies come in and out of the station. And so she became a school teacher. But I got that little taste of it and decided to look into it a bit more and really got hooked on the idea. So that was when we were in year 10. So we both went on to year 11 and 12 and she became a primary school teacher, still is.
Yeah.
Still is a good friend, but we went totally in different directions.
Do you think she would have lasted in the police force?
Not a hope in hell. No, she knew, and she knows it too. She knows she's better suited for kids. Then again, you know, I probably wouldn't be the best teacher in the world. So,
You had the train down in Goulburn, a beautiful part of the world. How did you find that?
I went down to Goulburn I had to wait till I was 19, so it was like the year after I left school. Went down in summer, which was mostly 40 degree days, and it was really, really hot. And 3 months of just basically physical training and learning all about the law and all that kind of stuff. It was pretty hard. The physical side of things was very hard at the time, and I was quite fit anyway, but they really did push you. I'm not sure what it's like exactly now, but it was a good time. In a lot of ways, a bit of an eye-opener, a shock, and, you know, got treated pretty mean down there because you were, when I say mean, I mean, like, you know, they treated you like you were going to be treated out in the streets. So to get you, you know, get used to what you're going to cop out in the streets, like abuse and all that kind of stuff. So they really did put you through the paces, the instructors, and that was an eye-opener. And I rang home about 3 days in and said, I'm coming home.
Oh, okay.
Mum and Dad said, no, you're not. If you come home, we're changing the locks. You've waited this long to get in. You've got to give it more than a week. So, of course, I stayed.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Old New Borrowed Blue, where my guest is author Karen Davis. And she's picking the songs today. So, Karen, you've gone, we have to talk about your old song now. Mm-hmm. You've gone with Billy Joel, which is great. Because I love it when people come in and pick songs that I already own. I don't have to go out and buy them or anything. So thank you for choosing Billy Joel. What song have you gone with?
Only the Good Die Young, because it just reminds me of growing up and Billy Joel's a legend. And it's just a feel-good, you know, all-around good song.
It is a great song. And thank you for choosing it. So here is Only the Good Die Young, Billy Joel.
Only the good die young. That's what I said. show me a sign. Send up a signal, I'll throw you the line. Stained glass curtain you're hiding behind never lets in the sun. Darling, only the good die young. Much more fun, you know that only the good die young. Oh, baby, I tell you, only the good die young. Only the good die young.
An absolute classic pop rock song there. Billy Joel's Only the Good Die Young off the 1977 album, The Stranger. Radio stations wouldn't play it when it came out because they considered it anti-Catholic.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Had you heard that before?
No, I haven't heard that at all.
And then I think a little while later, Billy Joel came out and said, no, it's pro-lust, if anything. And he said the fact that people wouldn't play it helped the album just... Shoot up the charts because no one was playing it. So everyone went out and bought it. And he was like, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for
what do they
being
say
so
about
wrong.
Any publicity is good publicity?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So you started policing in Newtown here in Sydney.
Yeah, that was the first station I went to, Newtown, just up the road from where we're sitting right now.
Yeah.
Very busy station back in the late 80s, early 90s. It was one of the busiest stations in New South Wales, actually. And it was a punishment station as well for... police who might have been a little bit naughty somewhere else at other stations if they'd kind of done the wrong thing. They got sent to Newtown and other stations, Redfern, like the busy stations. And so you had the cast of characters out on the streets of Newtown. We had a lot of homeless, a lot of massive drug problems, massive suicide problems, and like a suicide rate was ridiculous. But you had, just a whole lot of different types of people on the streets, but then you had some quite interesting characters within the walls of the police station as well. So as a 19-year-old, very innocent and bright-eyed, it was quite an eye-opener, not just to be dealing with, the people you had to deal with out in the streets, but also some of the police you got to work with.
A 19-year-old woman, was it daunting? Did they treat you differently? How?
It was, at the time, very male-dominated. It's nearly 50-50, I'm led to believe now, male and female. So it's a lot different these days. But yes, it was very male-dominated. But I didn't get I actually got, if anything, a harder time from some of the females. And I don't know why that is, really. I think it was probably because they were used to being the only females there. Mm-hmm. Maybe didn't like somebody else coming in onto their turf. But most of the guys were great. Like, you had some old school sergeants who just didn't want females or, up the chain of command, kind of just didn't like females in the job, didn't believe they should be there. They used to call us Dickless Tracys.
Right.
So you kind of had that mentality, but the ones that were closer to my age were, you know, still a lot of them still friends today.
So you were in the police force for 20 years.
20 years, yep. I joined when I was 10. No, I'm joking.
Oh, hey, maybe. Do you ever get used to seeing horrific things? Does it ever become easy, like,
not? Good question. I get asked that a fair bit. I think you become kind of desensitized to a degree. It's still, you know, no matter what you see, it still can be quite shocking, and every situation's different, especially anything with a child involved is horrific. You know, I had to do a few cot deaths, and I'll never forget those, and some really gruesome crime scenes, or just really sad ones, like young kids, 15-year-olds committing suicide and things like that, and you just think, what a waste.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of things never, ever leave you, but you tend to, I think when you're working, push them aside, because you can't be upset about every single situation that you go to, because you might go to three jobs that day, you know, a drug overdose and a suicide and a bad car accident in one day. And, you know, you can't walk away and cry. You've got to be professional and you've got to deal with it at the time. And you don't want to go home and get upset about it either. So you tend to just push it away a little bit. Well, I did. I'm speaking for myself only. But I think a lot of cops tend to do that. And then, you know, that can lead to problems later on.
Which we might get to in a bit. But were there some fun times as well?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, the best times, you know, you can get caught up with all the traumatic things that you see. But I think the bad times are the minority, and they might tend to affect you, as I said. But there's so many good things. Like, out of my 20-year career, I don't regret it. I loved it. My 19-year-old daughter just told me last week she wants to join the police force. So, you know, I took a deep breath and went, okay, well, we'll be doing a lot of talking, but I would never stop any. I think I would encourage, you know, anyone who is looking at going down that path and was really passionate about it to do it, because it is a very good job and a rewarding job in a lot of ways.
Can I ask about this story where an older lady's teeth may have ended up in your forehead?
Yeah, a little old lady came in, and she was about 100 in the shade, or it seemed like that to me at 19 or 20, and she just kind of walked into the station. I mean, literally walked in behind the counter and just sat down at the sergeant's chair, sergeant's desk, made herself at home, and we were giggling at first, laughing, going, what the hell? And after a while, you could see she was not with it, and I was the only female there, so the guys I was working with said, you know, Karen, you do something. You deal with her, so we don't want to scare her. So I walked towards her and I said, you know, I was trying to talk to her, and she was just talking gibberish. And I said, we'll take you home. Just let me know where you live and all this kind of stuff. And then she took her shoes off at first and she threw her shoes at me. So I dodged the shoes, but then I didn't see the teeth coming. So she took out her dentures and just threw them straight up in the air at me, because I was way taller than her. And it just hit me square in the forehead. And literally, it was close distance, so it went whack, and I just had teeth marks in my forehead.
Sorry for laughing.
And then they just landed on the floor, and she took off out of the station and ran away. So we've got teeth on the floor, the lady's gone, and we've all just looked at each other and gone, what happened? And everyone's laughing at me with these teeth imprints, so we ended up having to go out and search for it or give her back her teeth.
Oh, no.
So those things are really funny.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, Karen, let's have a listen to your new song. You are going to play The Lazy Song by Bruno Mars.
Yes.
Why have you picked this one?
Because that's how I feel sometimes.
It's a bit of an anthem, isn't it?
I think it's just a perfect song for like one of those days where you go, I really don't want to do the dishes today. I just want to do nothing. Of course, it's harder said than done to do nothing, but yeah, I just like that song for that.
This is Bruno Mars.
Today I don't feel like doing anything. I just wanna lay in my bed. Don't feel like picking up my phone, so leave a message at the tone. 'Cause today I swear I'm not doing anything. I'm gonna kick my feet up, then stare at the fan. Turn the TV on, throw my hand in my pants. Nobody's gonna tell me I can't. Nah, I'll be lounging on the couch, just chilling in my Snuggie. To MTV so they can teach me how to Dougie, 'cause in my castle I'm the freaking man. Oh yes, I said it, 'cause I can. Today I
not sex. And she's gonna scream out, this is great.
Oh my god, this is great.
Yeah, I might mess around and get my college degree. I bet my old man will be so proud of me. But sorry, pops, you'll just have to wait. Oh.
Mars with the Lazy Song off his debut album Doo-Wops and Hooligans, and to make us all feel old, that actually came out in 2011.
Oh wow.
Yeah, crazy.
Feels like 2 years ago.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Karen Davis. Do you think being part of the police force gives you a different perspective on life?
I would say definitely.
Yeah.
You probably don't even realize it when you're working, but yeah, you're always, well, you're trained to be looking out for badness, I suppose you'd say. Like, you're not just, I notice with a lot of people just walk along, they're just, you know, kind of in a bit of a dream world. They're just going about their business. They're not looking around them. I always taught my kids to make sure you're looking around, because if anything, I'm probably over paranoid. But yeah, well, we're trained to look for people stealing cars and people doing something wrong. So you're not just kind of, you're always looking. And no matter whether you're working or not, you're still kind of got that hypervigilance, sometimes to the point of the ridiculous, where, you know, you just, if someone walks up too close behind me, I'll kind of jump and, you know, give them a look as if it's back off. They might grab your bag. That's what you're thinking. Whereas normal people probably just don't think, not normal people, but people who aren't in the police probably just aren't thinking that way.
Would you say it was a rewarding job?
I had a lady that had a boarder who died, 26-year-old, just basically died at her front door from an overdose of drugs. And I went back to check on her a couple of times after we'd done the coroner's report and seen her. And then she started bringing me in presents every day to the station, to the point of where it became a bit crazy. She was actually bringing in stuff from her house, like lamps and little chairs. And like, she was just a sweet old lady. Yeah. Didn't have much, but she wanted to give me stuff because she appreciated that I'd been nice to her. And, you know, I actually remember thinking, if I've done nothing else, at least, you know, I've done one thing.
Yeah.
So hopefully I did more than one thing, but, you know,
no.
Yeah, those kind of things. Or you get a letter from someone saying, thanks, you really helped me out there, or whatever. That's a pat on the back that you don't get too often.
No, it's very sweet. Can we talk about why you left the police force?
Yeah, sure. It's one of the first things I got asked when I wrote my books, Why Did You Leave? Basically, I started having panic attacks, and thought I was, you know, okay. I didn't really know what was going on, but I struggled through having them on and off for about 2 years before I kind of got to the stage where I was not functioning. I really couldn't leave the house or get my kids to school. I was really, really in a bad way, and was going to the doctors and the hospital all the time because of the panic attacks. I thought I was dying, having heart attacks, brain aneurysms, all this kind of stuff, because the symptoms were so physical, you know, like heart palpitations and dizziness and stuff. And so I eventually got help, which I should have probably done a bit earlier, and got diagnosed with chronic post-traumatic stress disorder. And basically what the psychologist said to me was, do you think this might have anything to do with the fact that you saw a lot of death when you're at Newtown? And and part of my career, other places as well, but mostly at Newtown. And I couldn't quite get that. I couldn't get my head around it, because I thought, yeah, but that happened a long time ago and I dealt with it at the time. But since I've learned since then that obviously I didn't deal with it real well at the time. I just pushed it away, and it was just building up over the years. And for whatever reason, I don't even know what the trigger was, but I started having panic attacks, and it was all centered around death. I was always scared that my kids were going to die or somebody was going to die, so it kind of did come back. Made sense that it came back to that.
And how are you today?
I'm very good. PTSD doesn't go away, unfortunately. It's a management thing. Well, not for me. Some people say they're cured, but the majority of people that I know with it, and I know a lot of cops and emergency services and personnel who have just, had their fill of basically seeing traumatic, scenes and death and all that kind of stuff. Some just leave before it gets to them too much, and others leave because they have to. Well, I left because I had to. I actually didn't want to leave the police force. I was told that if I didn't leave, I would never get better. So that was my trigger for leaving. I thought, well, I don't have a choice here. So basically, I think I'm very good, but I have to manage it, and I have to just be aware of, if I'm doing too much, or I can get overwhelmed very easily, ridiculously easily, whereas you think, God, I've been to all these different scenes where I've taken, led investigations, led search warrants, done some pretty serious stuff, and then I was having trouble, washing the clothes because I'd get overwhelmed with having to hang them out. And it sounds so crazy, but anyone who's been through it would get it. And so, I just have to really just watch myself and pace myself and do relaxation and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, we're going to talk about your books very soon, but before we do, we're going to play your borrowed song. You've gone with Van Morrison, Brown Eyed Girl. Why do you think this?
It's always been my song. It's probably millions of other people's song as well, but I've got brown eyes, and it used to just always get dedicated to me wherever I went, Brown Eyed Girl. And, yeah, it's just something that – it's my phone ring. It's just
– Oh, really?
Yeah. It's if they, anyone – we play Brown Eyed Girl, all my friends just go, oh, that's about Karen, So I've taken ownership of it.
Okay. This is Van Morrison with Brown Eyed Girl. Karen, your phone's not ringing.
Jumping in the misty morning fog with our hearts thumping, and you, a brown eyed girl. Sing sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la
la 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 ti da la ti da. Cast my memory back there, Lord. Sometimes overcome thinking about making love in the green grass behind the stadium with you, my brown-eyed girl. You, my brown-eyed girl. Do you remember when we used to sing? Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-
Brown-Eyed Girl there from Northern Irish singer-songwriter Van Morrison. Probably his signature song, really. Okay, let's talk about your books. How many have you written and what are they about?
Okay, so I've got my third one just came out last year. The first one, Sinister Intent, came out in 2013, and basically it's about a young detective, like I used to be, Lexi Rogers, and she's based at Bondi Junction Police Station. So it's set in the eastern suburbs and the city of Sydney, and it's basically just about her. She's been attacked with a knife and had some background trauma happening. So she's back at work and she's trying to make sure that she doesn't, let the past interfere with her future career. So she's a very gutsy and determined young lady, drop dead gorgeous, of course. And there's a bit of a love interest in there as well. Another detective who's, a bit too good to be true, but he's in there as well working with her, and they get thrown together on a job and, things like that happen. I actually got asked a question when someone first edited the book and said, I can't understand how two detectives would fall in love during a murder investigation. And I said, hey, why do you think so many police are married to each other? I said, this happens all the time. That's their bread and butter. But anyway, so it kind of follows. It's the three books are standalone books, as they say, which you can read them by themselves. They are a series as well. So Lexi is in all of them, and they're just same characters or similar characters and different stories.
Did you set out to do it like that? Did you set out to have Lexi in all books?
I give Lexi a lot. She cops a lot in that first book because when I was writing, you never know you don't expect to get published. It's not an easy thing. So I'm very, very grateful and lucky that I, was in the right place at the right time, I suppose, and had the crime knowledge as well, which helped. But I had no idea how to write a book. But once I, took about 4 years to backwards and forwards with my agent before Sinister Intent was ready to show to the publishers, and Simon & Schuster picked it up, Simon & Schuster Australia, and offered me a two-book deal. So I'd taken about, just over 4 years to get Sinister Intent ready to go, and then I got told, great news, all excited and everything, and then they said, you got 9 months to write the second one. So then it was panic mode because, oh, my God, it's taken me this long to do one. I hadn't even thought of another one because, I didn't expect to get the first one published. So it kind of just followed on from there, and so I just kept her going, and then three books later.
And how about a fourth book? Are we planning number four? Or
we are. I am writing a thriller at the moment, or I should say attempting to write a thriller. These my books are basically crime fiction, so they've got that mystery and crime and thriller part to it, but this is, I'm trying to do a psychological thriller, which is something just a little bit different, not quite as policey, but still a bit of a police theme. So I'm quite excited about that because it's just something a little bit different, and hopefully that'll go okay. We'll find out in about a year's time when I finish it.
Great. Karen Davis, thank you so much for coming in today and having a chat with me. It's now time for you to take us out with your blues song. You've gone with Break My Stride.
Yeah, I went with that one because I think it makes you feel good when you're not feeling so good. Okay. And, that was kind of something I used to put on when I was going through the bit of the darkness with PTSD. I'd go, no one's going to break my stride and, get through it, push through it. So I think it's an upbeat song and I just like it. Got a bit of strength to it. So that's why I picked that one.
Excellent. Great choice. Karen, thank you so much again for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me, Joel.
This is Matthew Wilder with Break My Stride.